Midweek treat? We've got you covered with our new What's On page. Everything from galleries to gigs, classes to comedy, and festivals to free events. Head to 2SER.com/whatson for more info. 2SER, stories, ideas, music.
And now it's time for Stages.
Stages.
All the world's a stage.
It's where we talk about
all things
theatrical.
It's about theatre.
Theatre makers.
If it's performing on a stage, we've got it for you here on Stages.
It's about half an hour long.
Okay, let's get on with the show.
Well, you're listening to Stages. I'm Regina Botras to take you through the show this evening. A little later on, Pixie Willow will be having a chat with the musical director and some of the cast from Company, which is a return season from the Depot Theatre playing at the Limelight in Darlinghurst. I haven't heard about this theatre, so look forward to that. Trisha Starrs will be giving us a review of Eurydice. An epic. Well, I don't know if it's epic. We'll have to have a listen and see what that's like. That's at the old Fitzroy Theatre. I had a chat with the one of the cast from Aspects of Love, a musical that's playing at the Hayes Theatre. So stick around. Theatre, and more theatre for you.
Love changes everything. Hands and faces, earth and sky. Love changes everything. How you live and how you die. Love can make the summer fly, or a night seem like a lifetime. Yes, love changes everything. Now I tremble at your name. Nothing in the world will ever be the same.
Well, you're listening to Stages. Aspects of Love is playing at the Hayes Theatre from the 22nd of November. And we have on the line David Hooley to have a chat about this production. It's an Andrew Lloyd Webber piece. It hasn't been on stage for 25 years. Can you talk about the music of the show and does it differ from his other work?
It's all sung out operetta style. But it's a very rich orchestral track. I think it is very different from some of his work. We've got the wonderful Abex Ensemble, which is a 12-piece orchestra, which I think is the largest orchestra they've had in the Hayes Theatre. So the wall of sound that you get when they start playing is just incredible. It's a beautiful sound.
Wow. Well, how is that spatially working in there?
Look, it's tight, not going to lie. But the designers have done some incredible things with the space because the Hayes is quite a small, sort of very intimate space. And what they've done is sort of try to open it out as much as possible to give that sense of scope. And the poor Apex Ensemble are kind of rammed into the back, but you won't see them, so they're nice and hot and sweaty messes behind closed doors.
Fantastic. So this is post-war Paris. How is this set on the stage? Are we visually seeing it? Is it post-war?
It is. I think in the terms of the design, it's rather ambiguous, really. At the end of the day, it's. What they're trying to do is sort of leave it more to your imagination because it is such a large scope of a story. It's 20 years. It's over two different countries. You know, you can't really put that all on stage, especially in an independent scene, independent venue such as the Hayes. So it's more of a sort of a general sort of a blank canvas, if you will, to allow the audience to sort of come along with the characters rather than be sort of led hand in hand to sort of go, and this is France and this is Italy.
Yeah, sure. So Aspects of Love, what aspects are we looking at?
All of them. I think that's kind of the point of the show is to sort of delve into all the different aspects of love and not just in terms of love for a relationship or for a husband or a wife or a friend, but also for things like for life, love of wine, love of passion, love of open space, love of a house, you know, simple things like that, as well as the more complex relationships.
And who are you in the story?
I play Marcel. I am basically one of the protagonist's best friend. I kind of am the calming nature, sort of aspect of friendship that comes along and just makes sure that everyone's safe and happy and secure.
Do you go through a transition? How is it told? Is it all told through the music or is there dialogue as well?
No, it's the music, it's all sung through. It's sort of an operetta style. So there's no sort of scene work. There are a few bits of spoken word, but not many. It's they try and keep it to a minimum and allow just the music to sort of take you along that journey.
So we're in the 40s. Are you visually, like, costume and that sort of, you know, tone?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. The costume is very much period, mm-hmm. And our wonderful costume designer Tim Chappell has done just a spectacular job in sourcing all that material to bring it in to make it such a vibrant production. As I say, it's on a rather sort of basic stage. So I mean, I say basic in that sort of blank canvas sort of way. So you've got to give those flavors of color and of a change of time and change of mm-hmm. era.
Mm. Is it musically kind of the 40s as well, would you say, stylistically, music?
Look, I am, it's sort of a classic orchestral sort of piece, and I don't think that I am educated enough in music to be like, yes, this is 1940s orchestral, but
in Paris, yeah.
Yes, exactly, in Paris in 1948 to be specific. I don't think I'm knowledgeable enough in music to really say whether it's period specific or not.
Yeah. Why do you think it hasn't been on? I mean, it hasn't been on for 25 years in Australia, or at least
in no, it hasn't.
Why? Like, is it different to, say, Angela Webber's other sort of more popular work, or I don't know.
Look, I think because it is in that more operetta style, it's sort of more bold and more sort of grand, that I think that it actually can be quite difficult for people to stage. It's such a sort of a big piece that I think people struggle to sort of to put it on. It's not necessarily for a lack of want of an audience. I think it's more from a
epic.
Yeah, from a
epic sort of. The epicness of it.
Yeah, kind of.
Orchestrically. So it's a love story, basically. And do the characters, how are they affected by love? How does love change them?
Look, as the song goes, love changes everything. it really does. And I think over a 20-year period, it's enough time for you to see the sort of the ups and downs, the way that love develops over a time. I think that it's that whole sort of development over time, and that the fact that it can that the story does play out over that time.
David Hooley, thank you so much. Have you got a favorite track?
A
piece of song?
Look, there's actually quite a few of them in there. Yeah. But I think one of my favorite is Love Changes Everything, the opening number, and but it's all such beautiful music that I think that there's something in there for everyone.
Terrific. And how do you come to be musical theatre?
Well, look, I stumbled into it. I was originally actually in radio and film and television, and then I sort of found myself in a musical one day and ended up going to the West Australian Academy of Performing Arts and studying music theatre. And here I am today, however many years down the track.
Wow, there you go. Well, thank you again, David, for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Terrific. Aspects of Love is playing at the Hayes Theatre from the 22nd. Get along and see it.
But empty rooms, there's so much in life to share. What's the sense when no one else is there? Anything but lonely.
Bluesfest Touring and 2SER present Lucas Nelson and Promise of the Real at the Factory on Thursday, April 18th. The co-writer of A Star Is Born soundtrack delivers a set full of cosmic country soul and Americana blues. Lucas Nelson and Promise of the Real rock in the Factory Thursday, April 18th. Tickets through Ticketek. Also appearing at Bluesfest. Proud 2SER sponsor.
And Tricia Stars, you've been out to the theatre. What have you been to see?
I've been to see the play Eurydice at the Old Fitz Theatre. This is written by Sarah Rule and really well directed by Claudia Barry. Sarah Rule, she's a contemporary American playwright, and she often puts women at the centre of her plays. This is based on the old Greek myth of Orpheus, who has to descend into the underworld to save Eurydice after she dies on their wedding day. Instead of this play concentrating on Orpheus's journey into the underworld as the Greek myth does, we learn all about Eurydice. So the play spends much of its time in the underworld, where she has to learn about death in this new landscape, and it's very much set apart from the journeying and despair of her husband Orpheus. Orpheus at this point is not her concern. Eurydice is played really well by Ebony Vagulens, and she's lost her memories and her language. This is what happens to dead people. But her father, who is in the underworld, played gorgeously by Jamie Oxenbould, remembers all, and he teaches her about her family tree and reminds her of love, and she finds herself again. This is the central story of this play, the relationship between father and daughter. Now, there are three stones who guide them in the underworld, a chorus of rules and regulations, and they're performed with a tongue firmly planted in the cheek by three wonderful actresses. They mock human ways with these little puppets that reenact scenes that have just gone. But really, these aren't very important. It's much more important the relationship between father and daughter and the way a daughter feels when she loses her father too young. Can she really transfer that love into the relationship of a new marriage? This was so moving and so beautiful. I really enjoyed this play. It's well worth a look, and it's running until the 15th of December at the Old Fitz Theatre.
All the way from Philadelphia to mark the anniversary of someone that I used to be, and it feels like a warrant out for my arrest. Baby, you got me checking in my rearview mirror. That's why I'm always on run. That's why I changed my name. And I didn't think you'd ever find me here to send me blue Valentine's, like half forgotten dreams, like a pebble in my shoe as I walk these streets, and the ghost of your memory, baby, is a thistle in the kiss. The burglar that can break a rose's neck is the tattoo, broken promise I gotta hide beneath my sleeve. I'm gonna see you every time I turn my back. send me blue valentines, though I try to remain at large. They're insisting that I love must have a eulogy. Why do I save all this madness here in the nightstand drawer that'll hung upon my shoulders? Baby, I know.
And I'm going to hand you over to Pixie Willow, who's having a chat with some of the cast and crew from Company, which is playing at Limelight. It's the Depot Theatre return season to Limelight, a place on Oxford Street.
I'm here at the Limelight on Oxford with Antonio Fernandez and Michelle Lansdowne to talk about the new musical Company that's to open on Friday. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. Now, tell me a little bit about the musical. Antonio, you're the musical director, aren't you?
I'm the musical director. I deal with the music. I teach the cast how to sing. I try to make a few choices about what was going to sound like on stage. The musical is one of the first concert musicals that was ever written in the 70s. And it's just a gorgeous piece of music. You know, I'm just very lucky that I get to do it. It's a dream of mine, you know, to do this musical.
Are you a big fan of Sondheim?
Everybody's a big fan of Sondheim. I haven't met anyone who's...
No, they're not.
Really?
There's a lot of people who don't like Sondheim.
Why?
Ooh, I like the conflict.
I don't know why.
The question is why.
I'm a Sondheim. I'm passionately obsessed with Sondheim, but there's a lot of people...
Yeah, but this show doesn't stay on the surface, you know, so much as some of the, you know, more commercial musical theatres that you see nowadays. This show goes deep. Makes you look at yourself, makes you look at your partner, makes you look at somebody else's partner.
Ooh.
Takes you on a ride, and then, you know, in the meantime, you get to enjoy some...
Michelle, tell me a little bit about the plot.
So we have the central character of Bobby, and the entire story revolves around the fact that Bobby's turning 35, and Bobby has been a bit of a confirmed bachelor, likes to play the field, and he has a group of friends, all of whom are married. That's why the musical, the concept can be seen as a little outdated today, which is interesting how they've just opened a London production with Bobby as a female, which actually makes more sense because the whole premise is that, you know, Bobby's 35, why isn't he married?
Mm.
And these days, a 35-year-old man, no one asks that question.
I get it,
really.
Yeah,
but I think it's more common for a woman. Like, if it's going to happen, it's often the female that has to wear that ridiculous question.
Yeah.
You know, like, why aren't you married? But I think it's him questioning, coming to that stage in life where you go, well, do I just have another meaningless affair? Is it just about sex? Is it just about having fun? As he sees his group of friends all married, settled, in all different stages of the relationship. That's what makes this show so interesting, because this is not an advertisement for marriage. It could be, but every couple has their own story. So it's a real ensemble piece for the rest of the cast, because you are looking at these other couples, plus three single girls that Bobby's dating. But it is all about Bobby's life, and we see through his eyes what these marriages are like, that sort of stuff.
And there's a song or a few musical pieces for each different number, each different, like, relationship?
Yeah, the show is well tied together by the music, because one of the aspects of doing a concept show like this is that the plot doesn't behave in your natural sort of, you know, it climaxes towards the middle and then you have some morals of the story. It doesn't work that way. So all throughout the show we stay kind of on a line, same level, and we hear different aspects of what it means to be in a relationship coming from different characters of the play. We see a scene and it is capped by a song, and that song sort of goes a little bit deeper. I think there's something great about Sondheim's music, and is that it allows us to understand a little bit better what cannot be told with words so much when it's, you know, what's going on stage. Okay, we see that, then we listen to the song, and then everything kind of makes more sense.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And is that what drew you to this particular project? Because you love Sondheim. How did you get into this particular project?
This is my favourite show of all time. So I've always wanted to do this show. So when I saw it, absolutely. Growing up in Spain, musical theatre was not really a thing. We only get big commercial hits. So once I started getting a little bit deeper into it, I discovered Company. It was the first show that I could discover because I found a pirate copy online and I was like, I'm going to watch this. And I was amazed by it. And I was most amazed by the musical director, which is a guy called Paul Gimignani, who is he's the Sondheim guy. So he just does all Sondheim guy, everything Sondheim. And he was just there wearing his sunglasses conducting the New York Philharmonic or something ridiculous. And he just seemed to be so at ease with it. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I want to be this guy. And I want to do Company. So
you're not wearing sunglasses though?
No, because my eyesight is terrible. So if I was wearing sunglasses today, it would be a terrible day, but yeah.
So you're paying
yes,
that.
Yes. So she sings a pretty iconic song called Here's to the Ladies Who Lunch, where it's a pretty acerbic observation on the vacuous, wealthy women of New York, of whom she is one as well.
So it's a bit of a dream of yours, actually, both of you. It's a bit of a dream to actually be on this show. So
I think we're just very lucky that we have the opportunity to look at this music, to inspect it, to analyse it, to bring it to life, to do something with it. It's just, I feel completely privileged. You know, I come from a classical music background, so having the chance to be given this music that is incredibly deep and it has so many details to
intricacies.
It. So, yes,
and it's hard.
Yeah, and it's really difficult.
I can see the passion when you talk
about it. I just love it. Yeah, so when you're
he's the main reason I came on board. I didn't know Julie at all, and I hadn't worked, but I had worked with Antonio before, and I have just the utmost respect for him as a musician. He is creme de la creme.
We did The Little Mermaid together, which is a different type of it's a different type of beast. Alan Menken and so on have their differences, but you know, it's still amazing music. Cool. And when I saw it, you know, in my mind, Michelle had to be Joanne. Like, I always envisioned, in the version that I watched, it was Pat LaPointe, you know, so like, Michelle is my Australian Pat LaPointe of sorts, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, what is different about this particular production? What would draw the audiences in?
I believe part of the challenge was dealing with the fact that it's a musical that is very of its time. You know, when you watch it, you can tell.
Because it was written in the 70s.
Yeah, so the couples that you see, the stereotypes you see, because everybody's a bit of a stereotype, a cliche, the music itself is very iconic, is very of its time. So this production, part of the creative vision that we had for it was trying to bring it into a more atemporal space. It doesn't have to be 2018 if you don't want to, but it's not 1970, especially when we take into account that relationship dynamics are shifting and all these things are happening, you know, with the role of women in society and how many steps we take it on positive directions. And the show, when it was initially conceived, you can see that that is there, but not in such an obvious way that a member of the audience of today would understand that that's what the show is actually about. I would say the original production kind of paints women and there are very bleak light at points. Mm. So we've tried to, I think successfully, shift that a little bit.
So shift a lot of the gender dynamics.
Yeah, it's basically showing that women are in control of the situation every single time and that there's not a male character that is taking advantage of, you know. So that was part of the challenge of bringing this to life. And then also what it comes to my side of things, the orchestration is just beautiful, but obviously we kind of fit an orchestra up there. Once you see the space, you will understand. So part of the challenge was reducing it. We have six people, including me. So we've got a cellist. She's gorgeous. We've got a flutist, a trumpet player. We've got a bassist, and we've got a drummer, because you need a drummer in a show like this. There's a lot of dance stuff going on. Lots of I have a lot of fun playing it. I don't know what, you know, people will perceive it as. There's many influences. Yeah. You know, I try to bring a little bit of everything into every show that I do. Yeah. I have very deep respect for Sondheim, so I like to stick to the text and see what's there.
Yeah.
But I would say it is not the 1970s production that you can listen to the original Broadway cast recording.
So
basically,
it empowers women much more.
I think my character is like basically a kept woman on her third husband. She's bitter and everything, but you do get the sense that she's sort of where she is because that's exactly where she wants to be, like, because she calls her own tune. So you could have looked at that perhaps in the past as she was that classic...
They never had a choice.
That never had the choice, but I think you... Hopefully you see her as someone who's... She may not be in a great space, but she's there because that's where she wanted to be. So I would suggest that she likes the money, she likes living in New York, and so that's what she wants, which is a way of kind of tweaking it. And I think you're right. It's hard to define because it is a show written in the 70s, but I also think that, like nearly all Sondheim... I can't think of any Sondheim that doesn't stand up to today.
Mm.
You know, like, you really can apply it to everything. He was so clever. His observations on relationships are incredible.
Yeah.
You know?
There's not a single moment in the play that you go, yeah, yeah, I get that. Because then he throws a completely different light on it. It's the whole concept about the lyrics and the music is this plane of ambivalence and not black or white, but a big whole grey, which is what relationships are at the end of the day.
Well, without giving too much away,
yes,
each of you, what's your favourite part of the play? Give us a little snippet. Yes.
I really love the opening number, Company. Because it's just an iconic piece of music.
Yeah.
The whole thing plays around the idea of a bell chime, a dee-da, and the whole show is written around that very small musical idea of just two notes. And from the very first musical number that we see, we get to understand that this is a play about this one guy who's surrounded by this incredibly overwhelming group of people, you know, and that it sets the scene so well with such musical brilliance. I'm just in love with it. That's my favourite spot. I hope we get it right tonight. That would be fantastic.
What about you, Michelle?
For me, I just find it funny. I don't know if it's a spoiler, but so you're often seeing scenes where it's not meant to be reality. We're actually, Bobby's thinking about us, thinking about his friends, right? So, but we're actually there, and he actually brings a girl home to bed. And he starts to think about what we would say and what we'd do, but we're actually there, right, in the bed, and but we're going, poor baby, all alone. Like, we're just observing him and this young girl, you know. It's just funny, like, he's going through this thing where somebody's almost having this kind of existential crisis or whatever it is, and we're all in his head because he's thinking about all the things we're saying, and then we're all saying, like, we all sing, don't you think she's a bit old for you, fat, tall, what are we saying?
That isn't scene she... is so complex.
It is, it's
so
really complicated because isn't she a little bit, and I go, she's old enough to be your mother, and all this, and, but yeah, there's just clever little things like that.
Gives you goosebumps every night.
Yeah.
Every rehearsal has been...
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so tell me when it's running. It runs from the 17th.
Yeah.
Until the 1st of December.
3 weeks.
At Limelight or not.
Thank you
so much.
Oh, it's great to talk to you.
All the best for the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Send me blue valentines, though I try to remain at large. They're insisting that our love must have a eulogy. Why do I save all this madness here in the nightstand row that are hung upon my shoulders? Baby, I know I'll be luckier to walk around everywhere I go with this blind, broken heart sleeps beneath my lapel. Instead, these blue valentines do remind me of my cardinal sin. I can never wash the guilt or get these bloodstains off my hands. And it takes a whole lot of whiskey to make these nightmares go away. And I cut my bleeding heart out every night. And I'm gonna die just a little more on each St. Valentine's Day. Don't you remember I promised I would write you these blue.
Well, that's it for us.
Valentine's.
You've been listening to Stages. We've been talking about theatre and theatres and more theatre. Thanks to everyone who's been on in the show this evening and the Stages team. I'm Regina Botros, and stick around for Film Fight Club.
Time.